Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Classic Pinball Podcast. In this episode, Tommy Skinner tells Dave and I a story about importing Bali re-theme conversion kits that you might not have ever heard of. You had one for sale, didn't you?
I did. I purchased a Lady Death kit from a guy in Germany, about 2 years ago.
That's the name of the pin?
Yeah, the name of the pin is Lady Death. It's a Playfield about glass and plastics. And it was essentially it's a re-theme kit for a Mata Hari. So it would be able to drop it in, and you know, people are sick of the theme of Mata Hari, or specifically in Germany where Mata Hari may not have been a real popular theme.
Yeah.
They could throw in this game Lady Death, which was essentially a attractive female vampire. I've heard people say it's artwork from a comic, I believe, called Vamprilla. Anyway, I ended up getting one, and then we had talked about the game on the show just because I had stumbled upon it through something, and then someone ended up putting me in contact with the guy who had one. I ended up getting it. Ran out of space time, couldn't find a Mata Hari, and got rid of it. Later on, I found another Mata Hari, and I knew the guy who I got it from had mentioned having a few, so I contacted him to find out exactly what he had, and he ended up having roughly 8 of the Lady Death kits, and I can't even remember the exact amount of another game called Space Rider, which is a re-themed kit of an outer space theme that would go into a Harlem Globetrotters. And I ended up buying all of that stuff from him. In total, it ended up being roughly 50 to 60 play fields and 30 to 40 back glasses and plastic sets for different.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. So I sold off all the Lady Death kits except for one I kept for myself because I had found the Mata Hari machine. And Ron Kruzman cleared that for me as well. I know I recently posted some pictures of that because I just finally picked up the play field over my Christmas vacation from him. And then I've still got roughly like 16, 17 of the Space Rider kits left. Unfortunately, those didn't have back glasses. There was only one, but I took that up to BG Resto in Michigan. So if that ends up being something you guys or any of your listeners are interested in, the black back glasses are available. And it's pretty neat to see like the different artwork go into these games. And just sort of the idea behind them, you know, that with Mata Hari's military theme, it wasn't real popular in Germany. And same thing with the Harlem Globetrotters, although that's an Americana, you know, sports team in Germany, especially in the 70s, that didn't mean a whole lot. 70s and 80s, American basketball team. So the Space Rider really made a lot of sense there as far as why they would re-theme that.
Did it come with cabinet graphics as well?
No. That's kind of the interesting thing was they had a generic cabinet covering. It was actually like a thin sheet metal that had stuff printed on it. I want to say like I picture it almost as like a tin sign type of thing. And it was the graphics, you can look them up, a Geiger cabinet artwork. Essentially, it's brown with a couple colored stripes, almost like a rainbow, and a letter G on it. And you would just hammer it over the original artwork and just nail it to the cabinet. Those were
really
cool, but the whole process of shipping roughly 60 play fields and back glasses and plastic sets, this whole deal of me agreeing to buy these things from a guy in Germany and getting it all arranged and through customs, it turned into a roughly 6-month ordeal to get it all taken care of. And adding in the cost and the cabinet graphics were just very ugly, honestly. To do that part of it, I had no desire because I figured anyone who was putting in the work to do one of these swaps and rethemes would come up with a different solution for cabinet artwork. And got the Lady Death machines, and I, as well as the Space Rider, have been working on either some of those guys are artists or no artists and coming up with some cabinet stencils that would be like period correct but their own unique thing.
Well,
I know George and I know a good guy for it, Joel de Guzman would be a good guy to figure that out. He's a great artist, local guy.
I think he's done Taylor's. I think he did Taylor's logo for his restrail.
He did.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, that's another person I can reach out to. So,
well, there's enough new artists out there. Process.
Yeah, exactly. And there's, and it's silly as it sounds, but that's one of the great things with social media. Yeah, I think that's how Zombie Yeti got into the pinball industry. Was what's his name? John Papadouk noticing something he had done via social media and reaching out to him. And there's just so many people who have always probably had these talents and never had a way to showcase them before. Now they're much easier to discover and reach out to. But that's a process. Like I said, I have the stuff, but it's just sitting there in my queue waiting to find time to do it. But I do know, like I said, I think I had 8 of the Lady Death kits and I sold the other 7. And there's a specific group of, I think, 3 guys that I sold them to that are working together that are contemplating installing them into machines, but actually going a little bit further than just retheming Matahari and installing P-Rock boards and completely updating the game itself. So the layout would be identical to a Matahari, but it'd have this Lady Vampire theme to it and a completely modern light show and rule set as well. So it's been really neat to see how that's kind of coming along slowly. Because these all just went out in the last couple months. But there's people out there that are doing really cool stuff, taking some of these classic games that, you know, we all seem to share a great passion for and updating them and making them, you know, something that's some more of the people who lean heavier on the modern maybe a little more interested in.
I'm looking at Space Rider right now, the back glass. I don't know if it's not that family friendly, but it's striking.
Yeah, the whole thing, both of those machines, they're definitely... you can tell they're a little bit more on the, they don't have the American conservatism ingrained in their designs, for sure. More revealing than even, you know, any of your greatest 70s machines out there, like Strikes and Spares and stuff. But
yeah.
So it's cool that BG Resto was willing to take that on from the one back glass I had wasn't even in perfect shape, but he was really into taking that and making it available again. So that was cool of him to do that.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought up all these Geiger conversions because I didn't really realize that had all these things. I'm looking at some pictures right now where we're talking and yowza. it's interesting
and it's just neat to me that there was, you know, somebody who thought, and it would be much harder today with the way these games are coded and the displays, but you know, they were taking something that maybe wasn't earning well or providing operators with a way to refresh their arcade without buying a brand new game. And they obviously had some pretty talented artists working for them. Some of the art packages are really pretty. Some of them are not so great, but a lot of them look pretty damn good.
Yeah, my guess would be that they, you know, wanted to forego the import charges and recycle a game fairly inexpensively. Makes sense.
Yeah. That was another really interesting thing was I've taken a few of these playfields up to Ron Kruseman for people who either bought them for me or some for myself. And Ron was actually looking at the wood and he, you know, Ron, this being what he does, was able to basically take a look at the layers that are in the plywood and identify like a really dark, hard wood that was being used for a couple of the layers that really provided a lot of density and strength to these play fields because where like typically, you know, if you get a new old stock machine or play field, you know, from any of these 70s, 80s Valleys games today, they're going to have a few problems, specifically insert edging and cupped inserts, maybe some planking, that sort of thing. These play fields all being printed really in the early 80s, they're perfect. There's no insert edging, there's no cupped inserts. And I just thought that stood out to me right away, having owned a few of the old stock playfields of that era and giving it to Ron and letting him have them to look at for a little while. He was able to basically analyze the wood on it, you know, not chemically or with any sort of test, but just looking at how it was made. And when I went up there, he had a new old stock Frontier playfield and then one of these is either a Space Rider or a Lady Death, and he just had me pick each one up. And the German playfields actually weighed a couple more pounds, even though they were relatively the same thickness. And he said that was because of the kind of the wood that they used. It was really interesting.
Dave, you've been professing this for how long?
A while. You know, another interesting thing, speaking of those playfields and how no cupping and that kind of thing, same thing with the games from Zachariah, like Farfalla and all those games they made. those
are all Italian, essentially, or Spain, right?
Yeah, they never wore. I never see Playfield wearing them. I never see cupping of inserts. So whatever they did, none of them, you know.
A location here, a Sonic game, and I know that's the Spanish company, and same thing. I have a little bit of insert edging, but it's been getting played on location for who knows how long, but none of the inserts are cupped.
Yeah, so it's like it's almost like a function of the wood heat shrinking up or whatever, and kind of making it squeezing on the plastic or something. Or I'd like to know what the differences are between the American made stuff and their stuff. Like, why is their stuff so better aged, it aging well versus our stuff?
Yeah, it is a good question. That was another interesting thing, having that many playfields from this company, as I kind of looked through several and laid them out side by side. And Ron noticed too, as I said, I took a good amount up to him to do stuff with. But you could tell they were really throwing these things together with whatever they had. And there's several playfields where the insert color patterns were different. Or specifically the Space Rider playfield, I have roughly, I'd say, a fourth of them were made with opaque inserts, and the other three-fourths were made with translucent inserts, completely clear ones. They'd still be colored, but opaque versus translucent. It was really interesting just to see. And he was like, yeah, they probably were honestly just using whatever they had or whatever they could get easily over there to throw these things together. So even within my little stash of playfields, there's some variants.
Wow. That's interesting. Another thing, was it Harlem did it? I've seen it on Harlem Game and also in Matahari. Valley experimented with this, with the plastic playfield stuff they did, whatever that material was. Have you seen that real dark kind of plastic wood they used? You ever see that?
Speakeasy is the one I think of.
Yeah, that's definitely what I was thinking of. Speakeasy, Electric just had a layer of plastic on top of it, I think, but yeah.
Well, this is actually, the whole playfield is not wood. They use some kind of like plastic composite for the wood as an experiment. Yeah. So
I didn't know they ever did that with Matahari or Harlem. I've only seen that on Speakeasy myself.
Yeah, I had bought one for $20 back at Allentown, 20 years ago. And somebody was grateful that I had one of those, but it was definitely different. And this is a good time to introduce something that I saw a week ago when I was in California. I'm touring this house, and there's a surface on top of one of the cabinets, and you could tell it was modern made, but the builder that I know said, oh, that's an interesting, composite. I said, what's so interesting about it? He goes, I was at the factory and they took a hammer and hit the surface several times, and there was no chipping, no marks, no anything. Is this story sounding familiar to anybody?
Deep root, perhaps.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, he wasn't clear on exactly how the product was made, but I guess they used plastic pellets and pressure in order to make this product. So I'm wondering, as you just mentioned, do you think that's where they're going?
I have no idea. I still have no faith in Deep Root doing anything. So until they have stuff that they are building and shipping and selling publicly, in which case, again, I hope they do. I hope they have cool stuff, because they've assembled some of the best designers and artists and coders, that have been around for the last several decades. But until it actually happens in pinball nowadays, unfortunately, it's one of those things where it's like, I believe it, I can see it, touch it.
Well, I played it in Houston, but again, it wasn't their play field. So we'll see. Jury's still out. I'll give them a pass until the game is produced.
Yeah, I know they've got their countdown running on their website for the Texas Pinball Festival at this point for their unveil. And they just announced for the people who had money in on Zidware, they're flying them down to Texas and paying for their hotels. So again, I think they will eventually get their stuff out there, but I'm perfectly content to wait and see on their stuff. Oh, whoa. Space Ride.